Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Tech Bites on Heritage Radio Network, live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Jennifer Leuzzi, and on Tech Bites, we talk about the intersection of food and technology, how the digital world is impacting how we discover, share, and produce our food in the real world. Click on heritageradionetwork.org every Monday at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time to tune in live, or download the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and listen anytime, anywhere. Before we get started today, I want to introduce everyone here in case they want to chime in on any of the topics. Everyone here eats food and has technology, so they definitely have an opinion to contribute. First up, the person most important and responsible for getting the show out onto the web and into the world is Jack Inslee, our engineer. Jack wears many Heritage Radio hats here as the network's executive producer and the host of Full Service Radio on Thursday nights at 7:30. Hey, Jack.
Hey, congratulations on the show.
Very excited and happy to be here. A little bit nervous, I'll admit.
Normal.
Joining us on the phone, direct from Forbes magazine, is Vanna Lee, who's a Forbes online business editor and has worked on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, specifically the food and drink category, since its inception in 2012. She'll be joining us on the phone in a bit.
In the studio. Oh, I'm here.
Oh, you're here. Fantastic. Miracles of modern technology. And in the studio with us, we have Leanne Brown, who is one of the 30 Under 30. She created a free PDF cookbook called Good and Cheap. Leanne, so glad you could make it through the downpour in Brooklyn.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and hi, Vanna, as well.
And joining us a little bit later will be Jason Wang. He's also one of the 30. He is co-founder of a food delivery company called Caviar, and we'll say hello to him in a little bit. Typically, in the first part of the show, I like to cover things that are trending on social media topics, subjects, events. I use Twitter and Instagram really as a personal newswire service more than I use them to broadcast my own personal status updates. When you follow actual media and news sources, that's a pretty direct news release. But I have found that you can also see news and trends developing when you follow top industry people. So in the Tech Bites world, that is chefs, that's writers, that's sommeliers, and other kind of restaurant people.
Yes, absolutely.
So I've noticed over the past few weeks, my Instagram feed has had a lot of photos of Korean barbecue, meats on Korean barbecue, and Korean barbecue parties and buffets and festivities. And this all centers around a new Korean barbecue restaurant called Kang Ho Dong Beijing, I think. And it just opened in Koreatown in New York City, and everybody seems to be going there. I've seen Instagram photos of Dave Chang there, Rich Teresi, Tony and Ottavia Bourdain have been there, a myriad of food writers and editors and celebrities were there over the weekend. So that is something that I think that's really trending now, and one of the interesting things is I believe that a trend on social media is actually a precursor to actual media. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if in a week or two we started seeing this Korean restaurant on, hot new restaurant list. Maybe it'll start getting reviewed and then actually appear in media.
Definitely. I think it's fairly clear that that's how it works most of the time. You sort of see your early adopter types showing their stuff on social media. I've been a little bit out of it, so I've missed this, but maybe it's something about the cold January weather. Getting to have barbecue at this time of year is kind of a treat.
And I think that meat and vegetables is pretty healthy and on everybody's allowed New Year resolution.
Definitely.
Diets.
Good for the gluten-free folks.
Exactly. A little paleo, perhaps, mm-hmm. also. So that's definitely a trend this week. And if you see some trends out there that you think are worth noting, give us a shout on Instagram or Twitter. At TechBytesHRN is the handle. So the focus of this first show is the Forbes annual 30 Under 30 list. And this list identifies and applauds young innovators and entrepreneurs who are really impacting the world and changing their industries. The 2015 list was released on January 5th, and it represents 600 people across 20 industries. The first Forbes 30 Under 30 list came out in 2012, and Vanna has been one of the list editors from the beginning, specifically on the food and drink category. So, Vanna, can you tell us what that first list was like and how it's evolved from year to year?
It was one, I mean, I have a passion for food, but I had never, you know, I thought this was such a daunting task, and it was really hard to go out there and just try to find these people and try not to, you know, we had to stay away from people who were already on other lists because there are so many magazine publications and online outlets that highlight these stars already. And so we're trying to find people who haven't been highlighted, and it was just really difficult at first. And it's also really hard to find people who are under the age of 30 who are very accomplished. Well, the first time we did the list was. And then now it's just, there's so many. Like everybody, most of the people on the list this year are like in their mid-20s. So it's gotten a lot easier because I think a lot of people have been more motivated, but it's just much harder to narrow the list down. But, you know, we saw a trend this year, and that was in food delivery. So that made it easier to kind of see the trend between the people who are, you know, doing different things in food and tech and, you know, choosing the right people to be on the list.
So how do you actually go out and find the people? Do you use word of mouth? I know you have other people who judge the list as well with you, one of them being Randall Lane, the editor-in-chief of Forbes, Danny Meyer, the CEO of Union Square Hospitality Group, is one of the judges, and I think also Lee Schrager, the founder of the South Beach and New York City Wine and Food Festivals, are helping you. Are they helping to identify potential candidates? Do you get phone calls from people's moms? Do they send in emails?
Well, we have a page on our website that we promote, you know, every day, getting the word out there. We put it on Facebook and Twitter. We know when we start the campaign, we say, hey, we're doing this, and there are 20 categories this year, you know, from food and drink to Wall Street to, you know, tech, mobile, social entrepreneurs. So we're just like, if you know of anyone, just submit it in. So we have someone who goes through all of the submissions and, you know, kind of weeds out the people who should be on there, the people who are, you know, who should be on the semifinalist list. And we also, you know, Lee and Danny and Randall are very helpful in, like, sending out emails to everyone they know, you know, explaining the list and what we're looking for. So we get a lot back from industry insiders who are within Danny, Randall, and Lee's social network. And it's just, it goes very far, and we get, like, hundreds of nominations back, and they're all amazing. A lot of it is by word of mouth. A lot of it is just sending emails out to, you know, CCAP and, like, different culinary schools, and we try to focus on the U.S. So it was hard to get a lot of names in the first year, but now we just have so many because the list is so well known that, you know, people know that when we're starting to, you know, we start the search, they're they're on it, and they're submitting names, and people are submitting themselves, and there's an application process as well. So we kind of look through everything, and it's a very thorough process.
Well, it sounds like you need to start for next year right now.
Yeah, exactly. I usually do that, and I've learned that from the first couple of years. We kind of started maybe a month or two in advance, and that just was not enough time to go through all of the applications. So, I'm probably going to start, like, tomorrow.
Wow. So, Vanna, can I ask how you said that this year was a lot of food delivery was something you've been seeing a lot. What about in past years or 5 years ago? How has the list changed? Have you noticed sort of trends in the industry in general?
Yeah, I would be curious to know also if demographically in the winners, if you had as many tech-based companies at the beginning as you do now. Because this year it's quite a few.
Yeah, you know, when we first did the list the first year, our main focus was on chefs and restaurants, you know, which restaurants were really good and who was responsible for this, you know, amazing food, whether it was a general manager or the executive chef or the chef de cuisine. It was a big focus on food, and we didn't focus so much on technology because we have another category for technology. But, you know, as we kept on doing it the second year, the third year, there was definitely this trend of food and delivery and people not wanting to go out to restaurants and eat. Like, you know, every year we have a list of 30 and there's one call out person who is the most standout. And the first year we had Jill Donenfeld, who started the Colonistas, and it was like one of the first times that one of the first companies that, you know, had that sort of like home catering thing. She has a group of chefs that will come to your home and cook for you. And there were a lot of those people, like there's Kitchit, there's Plated, which will send you food. And those were the trends in the past couple of years. And now we see that a lot of it is actual food delivery, like Instacart is just a huge one. I don't know if people are very familiar with them, but they've just done amazing in all the cities that they've opened up in. And there's also Drizzly, they do alcohol, you know, booze delivery, and they're getting very big as well. It just, so there's definitely that trend that's getting stronger.
What do you think the delivery trend is based on? Is it people are increasingly used to having what they want when they want it because of social media and technology? We can consume our media and entertainment and life at any moment in exactly the way we want to. Is that carrying over into food? Is it we're just lazy and don't want to leave? Or are we trapped at home watching all the media and don't want to go out?
I think it's just definitely gotten a lot easier. I mean, if you look back to 2000, food delivery was huge. You would just call a restaurant and say, I want, you know, this and that, and then have it delivered. But that kind of died out. And I, you know, there are several reasons for that as well. You know, it was very expensive for food delivery companies to be profitable because you had to pay for warehouses, you had to pay for, you know, food trucks, you had to pay for your delivery men. And so I think that we are learning from all of those mistakes. And now it's so much easier because people can, they're becoming more accustomed to getting things on demand. You can just get it on your phone. You can select, you know, with Instacart, you can just select whatever groceries you want, and it's a lot more intimate because there's an actual person going to the grocery store and, like, grabbing these things for you. And I think once people get a taste of that, it's just, you know, it's like once you have someone coming to clean your apartment, you just can't ever clean your apartment again. You get addicted to it. And it's affecting the economy a lot, I think, in a good way.
People are consuming, like, more, creates more jobs, more delivery jobs or inventory jobs or customer service jobs, in addition to those jobs already inside the restaurant. Now it's a secondary ring of those jobs outside the restaurant.
Right. And, you know, to give an example, like Instacart and Drizzly, they're helping to support their local retailers, and they're helping those retailers to grow their businesses, and the delivery helps the retailers expand their geographical reach, and also, you know, people are more tempted to order more if they're not carrying the stuff back home. If it's being delivered, they're just going to, you know, order more. So it's kind of helping everybody in return in the end.
For
the
most,
that's what I see.
There's a wider trend also of, you know, there are so many people who have very specific diets, people who have concerns about what they're eating, people who live far away maybe from the types of foods they'd really like to eat. And I think that, as you've already covered, that distribution has become easier and cheaper. I think that there's just a market for people who are saying, you know, I can't necessarily get the foods that I want right by where I am. And so they're willing to pay for a delivery service, and that's really exciting for people. I feel like there's this wider sort of interest in accessing different types of food rather than just what's in the grocery store around the corner from you.
And technology makes that all possible.
Yeah.
We have to jump to a commercial break, and then we'll actually get on the phone with Jason Wang and his caviar delivery food company, which is exactly what Vanna's been talking about. But before you go, Vanna, can you tell us what you think the upcoming trends are for this year and into next year? What do you see building on the horizon?
I see a lot more innovation in the kitchen. Namiko is, you know, that was founded by Lisa Fetterman. She is also one of the folks who made our list. And I think there's going to be a lot more gadgets in the kitchen that people can use that's not just exclusive to chefs. I think we can use a lot of improvements there. I mean, if you look at all of the appliances that people use in everyday home kitchens, it's not as advanced as like a restaurant kitchen, but I think because that would be so expensive to have all that equipment in your home. But I think there are going to be new gadgets that are going to be cheaper and easier to use, and you know, you can still make five-star quality food at home. And I think caviar is definitely going to be a game changer and pave the way. It's, they don't maintain their own delivery staff. And, you know, it's ordering food that you can't actually order on Seamless or anything else. It's kind of crazy. I mean, I already feel like it's in the future. Like, you can order from a really nice restaurant and get it to your home, and it's, I never thought that that would happen in, you know, a million years, because I used to live in San Francisco, and, you know, there were all these places where you would have to go outside and get in line. And, you know, it's just crazy that now you don't have to get in line. Or even with Instacart, you don't have to get a Costco membership to get food from there. You can just tell someone to get it. And so I think this is, there's a lot of room for improvement. So I think these will just evolve a lot more, and I think the kitchen will see some advancements for sure.
Well, we will put all of this into the archive on demand at heritageradionetwork.org, and then we'll have to have you back next year when you have the 2016 list and see if the predictions were right on. Thank you very much, Vanna, for joining us today. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk with some of the actual 30 Under 30 winners and talk about their technology and how they're changing our world.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks.
Today's break song is called Kami Mami by Nyer. This is Tech Bites on Heritage Radio Network.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
You're listening to Tech Bites on the Heritage Radio Network, coming to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Jennifer Leuzzi, and today we are talking about the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for 2015, specifically the food and drink list. And there are quite a number of young innovators and entrepreneurs on the list who are really using technology to transform the way we eat and drink. And one of those smart young people is Jason of Caviar. Jason should be on the phone with us from San Francisco.
Yep, I'm on the line. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. And I think you're winning on the weather because it's really cold and rainy in New York City today.
So you're in a winter.
So, Jason, you are the co-founder of a company called Caviar, which is billed as a premium food delivery system. And it's relatively new. It was founded in 2012. It says on your website, by five individuals who appreciate a good meal. So tell us how it started.
Yeah, so there were five of us in the beginning. We were working out of the financial district here in San Francisco. And every day we walked around trying to find places to eat for lunch. And all of us really love food and enjoy eating out, and we want to eat well. But then we realized after a couple years in, we got really tired of all the choices around us and that some of the places we wanted to visit for lunch was on the other side of town, and there was no easy way to get there. So we called a few shops and asked, hey, can you guys deliver to us? We're just in the financial district, but every single restaurant said, no, we do not deliver. So it kind of puzzled me why a single, what we classify as a great restaurant, they do not deliver. So the idea was born from that we wanted our favorite sandwich, which was in the Mission District, over to the financial district. So we decided to build the product, start off with just one restaurant partner, and we started taking orders and doing deliveries for them.
So what exactly is the piece of the transaction that you've created and manage?
So we manage the entire payment processing. So if the user would actually buy directly from us through our website or through our app, and then the order gets remitted over to the restaurant. And when that happens, we also dispatch a delivery driver who will go to the restaurant and pick up the food and then drop it off at any home or office in the city.
Okay. So the restaurant then is simply responsible for fulfilling the order and then having whatever to-go container or condiment or something like that that would go along with the meal, giving it to your delivery person, and then they're done. You then, I would assume, send them on some regular cycle the funds or the payment for that meal, or does it happen in real time?
You're absolutely correct. We take the payment first, and then we remit it over to the restaurant at a later period in time. Mm-hmm. And everything happens on demand. So if you want to place an order and you expect your meal within an hour, that's exactly what we do.
So that's pretty amazing as an idea. It's sort of being a personal concierge to someone in many ways, where I can sort of sit back and say, yes, I'd like a Roberta's Pizza. And I'm in the financial district in New York, which is downtown Manhattan, and you can probably make that happen for me, which is wonderful. Is it really something that's scalable, though, because it's so personal in the sense that it's one driver to one meal to one customer?
Well, actually, our drivers are oftentimes picking up multiple meals to multiple customers. If the drop-off is in within a few blocks of one another, it just makes sense that way if it's coming from the same restaurant. And that was the exact question we wanted to answer. Can this business scale when we first started? And in the first year, it was all about growing the business, getting the pieces together. In year two, we started figuring out, how can we scale this business? Can we get into other markets, duplicate what we've done in San Francisco? And New York was actually our third market. Mm-hmm. And today we're in 16 markets and growing. And we think we've got the formula figured out.
So what was the greatest hurdle then between, was it convincing restaurants? Was it convincing the consumer? Which piece was more difficult in terms of the sell?
So in our business, we actually have three pieces, right? The restaurant, the consumer, and also the delivery driver. You have to convince all three to kind of use your platform. And in the beginning, the first thing we did was get restaurants, because without restaurants, this business can't exist. So that was probably the hardest piece when we first started off, because at the time, we didn't have a customer base. We barely had any delivery drivers. We weren't proven yet. So that was hard to convince a restaurant to work with you. It's always the supply side can be a little bit more difficult in the beginning. Once we had the restaurants, the consumers came more or less naturally, because once they hear that their favorite restaurant in town now can deliver to them in less than 1 hour, they are going to check out the service.
Right, and, of course. I'm sure there's was many people like you and your friends saying,
this is amazing. Where has this been all my life?
Same places, yeah.
So that, you know, it's one of those, it sounds like one of those very practical stories of why can't we do that? I can't believe someone hasn't done it before and you did it. And now it's perhaps really going to be a game changer in terms of restaurant availability. But for you, what's your next step that you're working on? Is it more? Do you have some new features happening on mobile or web?
So a few things we're constantly working on is adding more restaurants in the cities that we're already in. So currently we are closing in about 700 restaurants nationwide. And also we want to get into more areas. We want to be in every major metropolitan city in the United States so we can broadly serve all the consumers that are out there. And we, of course, we want to be on all the platforms. Say we are on web, mobile web, and iPhone. So naturally, we want to be on all the platforms. Well, we also want to build tools so that delivery happens really quickly. If we can provide you the most extensive number of quality restaurants along with speed and at a low price, we think that will be the most compelling service out there for food delivery.
Well, maybe we can set up a deal where Chai Caviar can merge with a division of Uber, and then you can have this really insane on-demand delivery driver food mashup.
You can have your food in the car on the way to the next place.
Or have Uber be drivers, delivery drivers. Jason, thank you so much for your time. I want to make sure we get to talk with Leanne about her amazing PDF cookbook. For those of you who are interested in having amazing food delivered to their home, trycaviar.com is the website and the service that we're talking about. And congratulations, Jason, on your Forbes 30 Under 30 and, you know, creating a whole new category of food delivery.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. So our next 30 Under 30 winner is Leanne Brown, and she has an amazing free cookbook that's a downloadable PDF. It is called Good and Cheap, and it is to basically eat on $4 a day, made for people who are on extremely tight food budgets, particularly those on food stamp benefits or other type of aid programs. So this is an extremely specific audience and a very specific topic. So I think we'd love to hear what the inspiration was to put it together.
Sure, you bet. Well, so you say it is a specific audience that I had imagined anyhow. At the same time, it's a really huge audience. There's 46 million people who are on SNAP in the United States, and there's a vast number more people who are really interested in
and
that.
SNAP stands for?
Oh, sorry, that is okay. The Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, which is the new branding for food stamps.
Okay.
Sort of trying to bring in a little bit more discussion of nutrition rather than just pure sort of food. And what's been really interesting is that I had imagined an audience that was really purely people who are really, really had very little to work with, but the interest has been much wider than that. And part of that, so it was actually my thesis project for my Master's in Food Studies, which I graduated from NYU in 2013, the very end of 2013. And I changed the cookbook a little bit and made it available online. And it very quickly went viral on Reddit and a few other sites. And at that point, I realized that I needed to just get it out there. It was something that I had a huge passion for. I adore cooking. It's what I would spend all my time doing if I possibly could. But I also recognize how powerful it is in terms of being able to help people save money, help people enjoy food more, and help people tailor food to really be exactly what they want it to be for their health needs, for their just taste. And what I found really surprising while I was doing my studies was realizing how even many of my colleagues, people who I think of as sort of the elite in the food world, people who are looking at things in the same way that I am, didn't know as much about cooking as I had expected. And so I think there's something about my generation and even and younger people and older people even than I, we've sort of lost the ability to cook. And with that, a lot of the brilliant, clever little hacks that can allow us to save huge amounts of money over time. And so I wanted to, this was just a skill I happened to have, and so I thought I would like to share it, and the internet really made that possible and allowed me to identify an audience of like tremendous supporters. And after the PDF went viral, I ran a very successful Kickstarter campaign, tremendously more successful than I ever would have expected, to do print copies of the book. And we did that with a buy one, give one kind of thing, like Tom's Shoes, and have been able to, we're now sold out. I got 40,000 copies of the book printed, and we're now sold out.
Wow.
And we've given away thousands and thousands of them to people in need, which has been really tremendously exciting and just an honor to be able to do.
One of the things that I love about this story is that it is so spontaneous in how it developed and evolved and how people discovered it and latched onto it. You were studying and writing a paper and you love to do these things and you made it and you put it out there and people loved it and, you know, more people got it and more people got it. In an interesting way, this is also about distribution and accessibility, but
yes,
this is about the distribution and accessibility of information.
Yeah.
And how that can help what we do,
yes,
with food and how we eat.
Exactly. It was so fascinating to see how people identified themselves to me. Essentially, all I had to do really was put it out there. And then a few people found it and told their friends, and they identified themselves saying, you know, this really means something to me. And I get, you know, emails and notes from people every day saying how much it means to them. And I really, there's no way I could have done this in a time before these sorts of giant platforms to share were available.
So, and I think even as you very casually say, yes, and I just had to put it out there, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who have put something out there who did not have.
Clearly, it's
half
a thing
a million,
that has had its
half
time,
a million downloads,
yes.
Which you had. So, if people are interested in getting their own copy of Good and Cheap, you can download that from Leanne's website, which is
Leanne Brown, LEANNEBrown.com.
And you can also find her on Facebook and Twitter.
Absolutely.
And
Well, and so you can get the PDF easily, and please share it with as many people as possible. It'll be free forever. But later this year, the second edition will come out of the print copy. I'm working with a publisher, and it will be available in stores everywhere later this year.
Well, call us when that happens.
Oh,
and
of course.
Thank you again for being here, and thanks to Jason and Vanna for calling in, and everyone who listened to this episode of Tech Bytes on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.